You are now tuned in to Mastering Mitzvahs.
Mastering Mitzvahs.
A podcast focused on creating the perfect bar and bat mitzvah celebration, offering tips, tricks, and trends to ensure an amazing event. Mastering Mitzvahs. From New Jersey's own Explosive Entertainment.
Explosive Entertainment.
I know you're gonna dig this.
And here they are, your hosts, Dylan Weissman and Mike Langser.
Yeah! I still really like this like little soundtrack thing that we have going on. 100 and almost 50 episodes in, it still kind of gets me going.
Yeah! Well, welcome back to Mastering Mitzvahs here, Mike. It is a rainy, rainy April day. But you know what they say? April showers bring May flowers. I can't do much more of this rain, man.
I'm ready for the sunshine.
I know.
Time to pick up and move to the tropics or something.
Well,
do they do bar mitzvahs in Aruba? Because, like, I'm ready.
If you have a bar bat mitzvah in Aruba, we will front the talent bill if you pay for the flights.
All right, I feel it. Let's do it.
Well, welcome to Mastering Mitzvahs, episode 136. That's Mike. I'm Dylan. And listen, man, we had a cool weekend. One of the strangest combinations of events ever. So I want to get into that before we get into a very, very real topic for today. But we did some bar bat mitzvahs for some pretty high profile people this weekend.
We should say you did. I actually had the weekend off, so it was nice. I actually got to relax while you were out there stressing.
Well, I didn't want to take all the credit because it's definitely not all on me. But yeah, I was a part of some pretty cool events this weekend. So up first, super high profile event that kind of materialized out of nowhere. We did Matis Yahu's son's bar mitzvah last week.
That was pretty cool. So wild. And any minute now, we're going to share on social media the testimonial from Matis Yahu himself. He was so proud and happy, and you could see it in his emotion in his testimonial that he gave. It was awesome. And I think, Dylan, he said it so well. He said, I didn't understand why I needed an MC when I was a bar mitzvah. It was just a DJ. And, you know, he realized. And the words that he shared were just so powerful.
He was incredibly kind, incredibly sweet, incredibly, like, just emotional about the situation that unfolded. And to me, like, right now, the Jewish community is so together, more than they've ever been before. And it's always been a tight-knit community, but more together than it's ever been before, that hearing words from that type of profiled person is really special to me, you know. And it couldn't have come at a better time. I mean, we really need this thing. And it was wonderful. And, you know, it's funny. He was talking to me during dessert and saying similar things to me at that point. And the party was still happening. I'm like, hold on, dude. You have to wait. I need to capture this on video. And he's like, whatever you need, man. I got you. It was really, really nice.
That was so cool. And let's dive just a tad deeper. I think, Dylan, what made the event so real was that it was truly a party for his son. It was mostly kids. And it was really just a humbling event to celebrate his son becoming a bar mitzvah. It wasn't showy in the ways that you would expect from somebody of that level, that stature. You know, and this is a man of faith by all means. And, you know, they celebrated the way that I think they really wanted to celebrate. It was just perfect.
Yeah. Yeah, there was definitely no bells or whistles in any capacity. And I told you in my recap, Mike, I was like, this was the first time in a long time I got to go out there and just MC. Just MC.
Yep.
And that was pretty cool. So I loved it. It was great. And another thing that was really impressive about that event specifically is that the bar mitzvah boy had a massive, massive hand. I don't think that the parents had any other planning aspect of this thing other than signing the contracts, because his son Menachem literally just, he called us up. He's the one that organized the vendors. He's the one that did. And that was really impressive. And I think that because he had that type of involvement in understanding how the vendors were put together and how it all came, you know, into one big picture, I think that made him enjoy his celebration even more. It wasn't just like he showed up and it happened, right? He was a part of it.
I'm going to put a cautionary note here, though, for the listeners. Don't let your 12 or 13-year-old plan the party. This was such a unique situation, and the maturity level of Menachem was unbelievable, but he's still only 12 or 13. Don't let
you So you know, don't get me wrong. He was a part of the planning and the vetting side of things, but there was a full understanding of what his purpose was there. And obviously his parents, his father had a really, really big hand in getting the, you know, the financial side together and making sure that you were hiring professionals, but he really did a nice job. And I think because of that, he felt good about it and he was able to enjoy it more.
So that was a Thursday night mitzvah. And then fast forward a couple days later on Easter Sunday, which is a little ironic too, but on Easter Sunday, you were celebrating with a political family.
Yeah. So I go into this venue and I'm pushing in the very first case and I'm greeted by a gentleman with an earpiece and an American flag lapel. And he goes, "Hi, I'm with the governor of Pennsylvania's security detail. I need to go over a few things with you." Not, "Hi, my name is," it was that official. And he starts telling me about, like, listen, these are the exits that you're allowed to use. This is the, like, tell me about the equipment you're bringing in. And we were doing an event for the governor of Pennsylvania's family. And that was cool too. And he was just a very regular dude. I mean, I had a conversation with him. I saw him, you know, having some hors d'oeuvres and a cocktail. Like, it was cool. But he had a team of probably 10 security officers stationed at every single entrance and exits. And the not even the funny part, but like the part that I had to do very collaboratively was their radio frequencies in their headphone ear set communication systems was actually messing with our microphones a little bit. And I had to communicate with them like, "Hey, what frequencies are you on? I need to figure out something different for our mic so that we're not interfering with you." So it was very, very cool to have that type of
conversation. You didn't want to get on the microphone and talk directly to Secret Service? I mean, that would be pretty cool.
No. I'm pretty okay with that. I wanted to make sure that, you know, our bat mitzvah girl's speeches during her candlelighting were able to be heard without static interference. But it was very humbling because, like, you think that you got a big job. Wait till you see what they have to do. They stand there, you know. It was like they were guarding, you know, the crown jewel. It was intense. But they were kind as can be. And like I said, the governor and his family, they were happy to be there. And they were excited to just be there to celebrate and not worry about the, you know, political turmoil that may or may not exist in their day to day.
Fabulous. Well, that's a hell of a weekend. And there's a lot more to talk about. But we have another topic we want to get into today.
Yeah.
You know, for those of you that are watching online, you can see the title that, you know, scrolling across the bottom of the screen. We want to have a conversation about games. And I think we often talk about how we execute games at parties, different styles of games that can be at parties. But I don't know that we ever really did a full episode just about games and how to use them effectively and when to embrace them and when to maybe shy away from them. So let's just jump into it.
Well, this conversation has been sparked in our minds because just this week we had a family for an event that's happening in the coming weeks, book a set of games for their event and then have second thoughts about it. And we had to really talk them through the thought process as to why you should or shouldn't have games. And what they were worried about was that the games were going to derail the attention at the appropriate times from either the dance floor or the formalities of a grand entrance. And we had to explain to them how the use of the games works. So I think I'm gonna put a blanket statement out there, Mike, and correct me if I'm wrong, but when you hire a high-end games company who knows what they're doing with the foosball or the Papa Shots or the, you know, whack it back virtual whack-a-mole things or whatever it may be, air hockey, foosball, whatever it may be, they know that bar and bat mitzvahs have some very specific parts that need full attention. And they know to close it down during that time. So from my perspective and from my experience, and I think I'm putting a blanket statement out here, great games vendors in general know that they should be shutting down during those times. And if they don't, then A, maybe you shouldn't be hiring that company because they don't have experience bar and bat mitzvahs, or B, you need to express what times are important for everyone's attention. And if you don't say that, then I think you could run into some issues that obviously weren't planned for.
Can I pull a page out of that, of what you just said? There's something that you didn't say, but I think you truly meant, and it was, don't just rent games and have them dropped off. Because that is a very popular thing that we see. Like, you know, there are lesser priced options. Like, you just call a phone number, hey, I want to rent a foosball table, and somebody will deliver it, drop it in place, and pick it up 5 hours later. And there's nobody attending to it. And it really can't be the job of the dancers or the MC to manage that. What you did say was, when the right company is on site, they know, their on staff attendants know, I'm going to close this during the candle lighting because I don't want a game of ping pong going on in the back corner of the room disrupting the party, which is, you know, a very possible thing. A game of basketball, you know, the last thing you want is like a Papa Shot basketball bouncing all over the place in the middle of a candle lighting. It's totally disruptive.
That's
so
right.
To that point, yes, those things could be disruptive, but they should be managed correctly.
Yeah, that's right. And the way that I kind of see it, and the way that I framed it to this family, the way that we often narrate it is, games are a great part of your celebration when used at the appropriate times. Now, the rebuttal I get from that often, Mike, is, well, I'm paying for these games to be there for 5 hours, and I'm paying $1,200 a game. I want to get the full use out of them. And the answer is, yeah, but if you use it on the wrong, if you leave them open the wrong times, you're not going to get full value out of everything else, like your entertainment concepts or your.
I'm going to challenge you. Do you really get that rebuttal? Because I think that people really do understand why they should be closed during those moments.
You know, I get it. I get it from the fact of, like, I do. I say, like, why are we spending this much money if we're not going to get a, you know, the full time? And I see that a lot with, you know, we talked about it maybe two or three podcasts ago about how, like, families are often putting themselves in a 5 hour party because it's not a different price than 4 hours. So they're getting more time for the value. And sometimes it's not about the dollar per minute of open time. It's about the overall effect that you have there. So I do get that, Mike. And I think that that is a real thing that families consider, is like, why am I spending this type of dollar for this type of impact for this amount of time? You know, that's why, you know, we don't see a whole lot of, like, we used to see a lot of, like, dance troupe invasions and things like that, where for 30 minutes, these dance troupes are going to come in and dance and then leave. Like, we're not seeing a whole lot of that anymore, because I think people are seeing, like, well, what can I have that is going to give us the most amount of impact for the longest amount of time?
Right, right. So let's talk about the perks of these things, because there's a lot of reasons why you should consider games. And let's also go back to the premise. There's two different types of games. There's physical rented games, air hockey, ping pong, foosball, and a wide array of other things. And maybe even this conversation really encompasses photo booths as well. But then there's non-rented games, which are your, you know, Coke and Pepsi, your trivia, scavenger hunts, cahoots, things like that, that just a creative MC and their team execute. And let's dive into that. Those things take up dance floor space and dance floor time. We love a good game of Kahoot and a good game of Coke and Pepsi. But the reality is, those things are going to stop the dancing for X amount of time to execute a good game. Whereas if you're the type of family that says, I want nonstop dancing, maybe those are not the right games for you. And instead, think about putting that air hockey, ping pong, foosball in the back corner of the room for the few guests that aren't dancers, but to keep them occupied. And especially in the case of a party for boys, you know, when you know that there's a lot of boys that don't dance, it's like, how often do we hear, my son and his friends are really athletic, they really love games, they're really competitive, they're not much dancers. Well, that screams to me the right opportunity to have those physical game stations somewhere in the room to allow us to then still focus the dance floor on those other guests that do want to dance.
Yeah, it's a constant jockeying of what's important for what person. And if you know that there's going to be a set of guests that you want to entertain, but they're not going to be entertained on the dance floor, which is 9 out of 10 times the focal point of the entertainment, then you got to give them some sort of outlet. And that's where photo booths became really popular, is that it was an outlet for someone who wasn't on the dance floor. Well, an extension of that are these enhancements that we're quantifying as games, the pop a shot, the foosball, the, you know, ping pong, the connect, giant connect four, giant Jenga. Like, that stuff is a great outlet for those rambunctious kids who are not going to be on the dance floor, where they are now no longer sitting around getting into trouble. Because if they sit around, they will find trouble, whether it's destroying a bathroom or, you know, running out into the parking lot, they'll find trouble. That's what 13-year-olds do. They're mischievous, and that's what's going to happen. And even as well-behaved as you hope your kids are at these things, when they get together with a bunch of friends and relatively unsupervised, it could happen. And these games are a great outlet. So, Mike, what I want to talk about are, why are games important, and what type of games should you consider? So we talked about why games are important, because it gives you a great outlet. But what type of games? To get the best value, in my opinion, you want a game with a high turnover rate. For example, a timed air hockey contest, allows for two players to play for, let's say, 1 minute, and then it moves on. But a air hockey contest that takes two players and it's first one to six goals, and then they move on, ends up taking a lot more time. So that, in my opinion, is one of those games that may not have a high turnover rate. My son is screaming in the background, giving us more commentary. But if you if you want a game that has a high turnover rate, maybe you want to consider a giant Jenga, where after you pull them out, they fall over, and then you get to put them back up, and now a whole new game is set up. So consider the games that give you the most amount of repetitions in the game versus games that take a long time to develop.
I also always try to get four-player games or greater. And the air hockey example you gave of two players, actually, in most cases, we try to do four-player air hockey, you know, play as teams. Jenga that you mentioned can be four players, you know. But I think before we – I think throughput is so important. That's like one of the most important things. But I think the first piece is actually what fits in your room or fits in your space. Like, when you're deciding what games you want, that's the first piece. What do I have room for?
Yeah.
Then once you figure out what you have room for, then we figure out what the right throughput is. I don't love casino tables at Bar and Bat Mitzvahs, and sometimes we get asked for that. Because just what you said, you know, you could be sitting there playing 20 to 30 minutes of blackjack, you know, and you get into it, but that blackjack table is only good for eight players. There's eight positions at it. They're sitting there for 20, 30 minutes. Nobody else is able to play. It's not really a spectator kind of thing. Like Jenga, believe it or not, like, people enjoy watching. Like, the anticipation of who's going to drop it is there. So yeah, I mean, even not only considering throughput, but considering like what's interesting to watch too.
Yeah. And it's funny because that's the development of these large games. Basically, you know, the most popular games we have are actually oversized versions of standard games. You talked about, you know, an air hockey that is two players, you try to make it four players. Well, actually, there's a custom game that we have that's six player air hockey with three different goals, allowing three people on each side to be shooting on all the different goals in front of them. And you have giant foosball, where instead of it being a four-player or six-player game, three to, you know, two to three aside, it becomes six aside, and it's 12-player or 20-player. And, like, that's where you get the development of these large, oversized games. But then it goes back to your point of, like, while those are flashy, fun, and cool, if they don't fit in your room, it becomes a challenge. Now, here's my discretionary to this. If you want these games and they don't fit in your room, but you want to have a dance party, I would full stop there. You shouldn't have the games, because if you're going to put the games in a different room, every single extra auxiliary room you have disconnects your celebration. And if you want people to be fully engaged in what's going on for your son or daughter right then and there, it's really important to not disconnect it by adding an auxiliary room of some sort.
Unless that's the goal. And I can think of a party that was so epic that we did on a boat, that one of those big like charter cruise ships that goes around New York City, and the third floor of this boat was nothing but games and activities for the kids. The second floor was a dance party for the adults, and that was by design. Like, that was the whole goal. We're going to get everybody together for introductions, candlelighting, horror, and then we're going to set the kids back up to the third floor. And sometimes that is the request, you know, especially when it's a huge guest count. You know, there's 250, 300 guest parties. You can split up the party. But if your party is in that 125 to 150 range and you want it to feel cohesive and you want the kids and adults to be celebrating together, you're absolutely right, Dylan. Like, games either need to be in the main room or they need to be considered for cocktail hour only, or maybe just forgotten about.
So, you know, when you talk about those auxiliary rooms, you will disconnect your celebration. And this is just like a tip in general, like food in another room, dessert in another room, it will segment your party. It will derail it a little bit. But if that's okay with you, then set that expectation ahead of time.
Sure. A couple of weeks ago, we had a party where they set like what they quote the quiet room. And that was for guests that they knew didn't want to be in that louder space. And that's okay. That's by design. And that's, I think the beauty of what we do is that it's not cookie cutter. And while we have formulas for success, the reality is figure out in your mind what makes the most sense for you and your guest dynamic.
Right. That's right.
Dylan, we were talking before about Coke and Pepsi, and you know, something kind of popped in my mind. I'm going to just kind of insert this now. Is there's a right time and a wrong time at a party to play games and to occupy a dance floor. Yeah. You know, you spoke before about closing games at a certain time, but let's talk about embracing games at the right or wrong time. Because let's say it's a 4-hour party and we do Coke and Pepsi by request early in the night. That's great. The adults watch it. The kids are having fun. They get the, you know, energy out, but we still have plenty of time to celebrate on the back end. Flip that, though. There have been plenty of times that families say, we want Coke and Pepsi after dessert. And that's kind of the recipe for, all right, adults are going to start saying their goodbyes. Because once the adults have their cake, coffee, dessert, and they look out onto the dance floor and there's not an opportunity for them to dance, there's not that calling for them. And they look out there and they just see the kids running around playing Coke and Pepsi. Sure, they're watching the kids have fun. But, you know, in their minds, I think their celebration is over. So I would try to avoid Coke and Pepsi in that last 45 minutes, by all means.
So I am very calculated. I mean, Mike, you and I have been working together for a while now. You know that when I run games, it's always with a purpose. So in my experience, Coke Pepsi should be used as a way to crowd control kids to go do something, whether it's go to the kids' stations or go to the dessert buffet or something like that. It should be used as a crowd control because let's say you have 80 kids. If you just open up the buffet and say, kids, go eat, you now have an 80-kid pileup by the buffet. So I really try to use elimination-based style games like Coke Pepsi as a way to crowd control towards the stations. Additionally, the timing of that should be while the adults are eating. Therefore, the floor can be relatively clear and safe, and the adults aren't missing any opportunities that they otherwise would have had. Same goes for, you know, other elimination-based style games like the scavenger hunt or something like that. Additionally, it becomes something to look at, something to watch for the adults. They get to watch the game, and it's entertaining for the majority of them. Then there are other games that are not elimination-based, like the Kahoot-style trivias that are used on the screens. I love using them as a way to redirect attention towards a very specific spot, like the TVs. For example, toward the tail end of meal service, instead of just opening the dance bar by saying, hey, everyone, let's get up and dance, getting everyone's attention directed at one specific place, like the TVs for maybe a Kahoot, allows everyone to then realize, all right, what's coming next? And then the MC can then say, everyone, please rise up out of your seats, join us on the dance floor for XYZ, as opposed to just saying it arbitrarily. It's a rhyme and a reason, and it's very calculated. So I like using games as either a way to move into the next phase or direct your attention so that we can move in to something different. Those are very, very calculated. So therefore, when you say you want these games, you should really leave it up to the entertainment team to design it around what's going to be best for your overall goal.
I hit the nail on the head there. literally took the words out of my mouth. So that was perfect.
So to recap, there's two different styles of games when you're thinking about this. There's the games that take up dance floor space that are run by the entertainment company, Coke, Pepsi, Scavenger Hunt, Kahoot. And then there are games that have a physical representation that have space in your room, like the basketball, foosball, knock hockey, video game towers, things like that. Yep.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, to bring it all back, you know, should you have games at a party? Well, you know, I think the trend that we're seeing, if we take trends out of New York City, the trends right now are games are in, games are hot, and games are custom branded often. Like, you know, the coolest parties that you see on Instagram are the parties that have these immersive experiences. You know, we call it an immersive photo booth, but there's also immersive games. And like, if you were involved in this game or activity that matches the theme, it matches the branding, there's a wow factor there. And it is something that separates the parties. And, you know, we've spoken so much about the generic games, the air hockey, ping pong, foosball, because they just flow off the tip of our tongue so easily. But, oh God, I think it was 3 weeks ago, we had virtual hang gliders at a party. Like, that is cool. And that is something that people don't see often. I guarantee those guests will be talking about that experience that they had forever. Like, I mean, when else in your life are you doing a virtual hang glider? And now that fit the theme because the theme of this party was aeronautics and, you know, flying. So that was, you know, one of several stations that they had. And, you know, we got to embrace it using trussing and, you know, slings and the VR goggles. So not every game has to be air hockey, ping pong, foosball. We love thinking out of the box. It all just boils back to what we said. What's the throughput like? What's the space allowance? And how much do you want to embrace these activities or not? And I think when, you know, Dylan, you I'm thinking about the party that you did at Bella Vista.
Oh, yeah. The spot racing one.
Everything about that party was race cars. And there was all different racing simulators going on. Like, that's such a standout type of event. So embrace them. Why not? You know, tie it in. And after all, these parties are for kids, right? What do kids love more than anything? It's games. Straight up.
Yeah, it also breaks the ice. It does a nice job for that. It gives something that allows for an uncomfortable situation, like dressing up and going to a formal event, be more comfortable to them, more familiar to them. This conversation started with, I had a family who had games, you know, 3 weeks ago, and then out of nowhere said, I'm afraid that they're not going to pay attention to the dance floor and be a part of the dancing and be a part of the formalities. I don't want the games anymore. And the answer is no. There are tactful ways to use the games as a way to help move your celebration along. You know, my formula for success kind of looks like, listen, if you're going to have a really big dance party and you know your crowd is super fun and engaging, in reality, it's probably about 60 to 70% of your crowd is like that. But what about the other 30%? Is there something for them? And I think that these games are one of those ways to make it happen.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also one more little hiccup that happened at an event very, very recently. It wasn't even a hiccup. It was just like something that made it challenging was we had they booked games and they were in the cocktail space. So they really wanted the cocktail space to have fun and engaging games. So they had their foosball and their air hockey set up there, but then they wanted it to also be in the main room and they wanted it to be broken down and moved. Mike, that was a real challenge for us.
So I'm going to pause here for a second and let's dive here for a second. We often hear, hey, what do you guys do with kids during cocktail hour? And, you know, what games, what activities are popular for kids during cocktail hour? And this is what opens up this games conversation so frequently. And that's where we get into, you know, it is a great time for the icebreakers. And we have plenty of things that don't need to be rented that we do during cocktail hour. But, you know, that is also the wow factor when you walk in and you see all of these activities. Then the conversation comes up, well, it is a lot of money for 1 hour. Can you move them? And the answer often is sometimes. Sometimes we can move them. You know, to move these activities that often weigh, you know, 200-300 pounds, and they're large and they have to be assembled on site, that, you know, they don't move so easily. It's not like, you know, picking up a PlayStation in your house and just moving it from one room to another. Like, these things take sometimes 2, 3, or 4 guys to lift them and move them. But sometimes they need to be assembled or disassembled to get from room to room. That motion of moving from space to space can often be very, very obtrusive while guests are in the room. So the reason why I say sometimes is it depends on the venue layout. It depends on how wide the doors are. It depends on, you know, the location physically from cocktail hour into the main room. There was a party a couple of months back that wanted us to move games, but we had to go like down steps. We built everything up a flight of steps and we had to go down the steps to move it. It just wasn't going to happen effectively. So if that's the case and that's a struggle of yours, evaluate what the importance of cocktail hour games versus main reception games are. You know, there's really nothing wrong with opening up the main room early for the kids anyhow. That's a common move too. If you want the kids to enjoy the games, just get them in the main room earlier. That's A-okay.
Yeah.
So yeah, the logistics, like that hang glider thing as an example, could not be moved, period. Like, that was a 3-hour assemble. There was no way to disassemble it and move it. That was in the main room the entire time.
Yeah, it's also a safety thing, Mike. Like, we can't just break the stuff down and move it in the middle of your party. You have guests walking around there. The reason we get there early, so early, is because we don't want to be pushing cases and carrying, you know, huge sticks of truss through a room. And often these games have a lot of big component pieces. So we really can't be moving it for the safety of your guests. As well as the optics of it, because you don't want, you know, a distracting clanging of trussing coming through while your grand entrance is happening. Like, it's not a good look. Yep. So I believe that let me try to close on this. You remember you said, like, I don't love blackjack or poker tables or casino tables at an event because it's a slow throughput. That's a great cocktail hour enhancement, because they can sit for 30 minutes and be entertained. And then when it's done, it's done. I mm-hmm. love doing a kids casino where, you know, the first 5 minutes I'm explaining the rules, they all get their chips. And then the last 10 minutes we shut down and we use the tokens and the chips and the monies that they collected in their gambling process to auction off awesome big prizes. And then that's all done. And then those games are broken down and it's see you later, bye. It's a great interaction for the hour. But that style really wouldn't be effective in a main room setting. So games are an ever-growing beast, man. They really are.
It's a big part of mitzvahs. It always has been. And let's embrace it. Let's do it, but do it the right way, just like everything else that we preach. So as always, thanks for tuning in. Mastering Mitzvahs. This is episode 136, talking all things games. And we'll be back next week, I think, with a guest. But we're not going to let that secret out, because last time I talked about who the guest was going to be in advance, we had to make a schedule change. So we'll see what happens next week. We look forward to another great episode. And as always, if you have any questions or anything you want us to discuss, hit us up. Take care.
See ya.